You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The spring migration season is coming up here in Wisconsin. Birdcast reports that over 7 million birds flew over Wisconsin last night during peak migration that gets up to 12 million birds. Our next guest says that birds are more than just a natural wonder. They can teach us how to pay attention to and take care of the world around us and the people around us. She's with us now to talk about her new memoir, which tells the story of how she and her neighbors found community through birds and worked together to protect a Wisconsin park. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like bird watching? Has it ever inspired you to take a closer look at the world around you? Have you ever been involved in local conservation efforts to protect local parks and wildlife spaces? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Trish O'Kane is a former journalist, an environmental educator, and a senior lecturer at the University of Vermont. She created the Birding to Change the World service learning course and program at UW-Madison while completing her doctorate. Her new book is called Birding to Change the World, a memoir. Trish, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show.
You did not grow up planning to be a bird watcher or a bird enthusiast. How did you get your start in bird watching? It came at a difficult time in your life just after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans.
That's right. People who knew me 25 years ago, 30 years ago, when I was a human rights journalist in Central America, would probably laugh if they knew now I was teaching ornithology. I'm an accidental ornithologist and an accidental teacher as well. It was in New Orleans teaching at Loyola University when Hurricane Katrina hit, and our home was destroyed, our neighborhood was destroyed, many people drowned. And, you know, I was really distraught, and I hadn't thought about environmental issues in any serious way before the hurricane. And suddenly, you know, nature was in my living room, so to speak. And I wanted to understand what had happened and why it had happened. I didn't understand why the levees had failed. I didn't really even understand sea level, to be honest with you. And we were living below sea level. So after the hurricane, I just started watching birds in my yard as a way to calm myself down before I went to go teach, because it was difficult teaching in the city after the storm. But it was, I didn't have binoculars. I didn't have a field guide. I just started watching my yard birds.
Ultimately, you end up deciding, hey, I want to do more of this environmental stuff. You apply at a graduate program in a place called Wisconsin. You've been living in New Orleans. You're in Central America. You had certain reservations about coming up here. What were they?
Well, first of all, I didn't know anything about Wisconsin, the geography. I knew it was cold, right? That was it. Like, my vision of Wisconsin was, you know, being buried in a blizzard under, you know, 6 feet of snow or something. Sort of a nightmare, a very an ignorant stereotype. But UW-Madison had an excellent, one of the best in the country, environmental studies program that allowed me at 45 to take my social science background. I had two master's degrees in social science, zero in environmental science. I hadn't taken biology since the eighth grade. But UW-Madison accepted the social science background and allowed me to do a PhD in environmental natural resources. And I took basically 4 years of undergraduate ecology, biology, every science-ology you can think of, including ornithology. And so the school was so good, and also it was so beautiful when I came up. I quickly, you know, got over my reservations about the weather, although the first winter was the worst that Wisconsin had had in a century. So if it hadn't been for the birds and my birding class, which forced me outside in the winter, I don't know if I would have made it through the first year, to be honest with you.
And you formed a connection with your local park. It's Warner Park. Not one that I think, if people don't know Madison, it's not maybe at the top of people's list for a nature type of
right.
park. There's a lot of recreation there. What was it that led you to have this connection and find such a rich natural part of this city park?
Right. Well, first of all, when we moved up from New Orleans, my husband and I, we wanted to get a house, and the only place we could afford was on the north side, and it was beautiful. We loved it. It reminded us of Louisiana because it was a wetland park, right? Warner had a wetland, and we bought a little house right across the street. It was 5 miles from the university. But I had no idea what was in the park. Again, I didn't come to Madison as an ornithologist or even a birder. I just enrolled in an ornithology class. It was fantastic. And the professor, Dr. Mark Barris, said, every week, go somewhere for 1 hour and sit and watch the birds or walk around and, you know, identify them. And I thought, that park's across the street from my house. I'll just go in there. There has to be some birds in there. So I ended up spending hours and hours in there every day. And over the course of my PhD work in 5 years, I found 141 species, over half of them long distance migrators that went to Central America or South America or the Deep South in the wintertime. And since I left Madison in 2015 to come to Vermont for a job, Wild Warner, the group that protects Warner Park now, has found 178 species they have added to my original list. So even though there are a lot of recreation facilities in that park, it's an amazing example of how we can share this planet with other species, how we can coexist. And that was the question really I left New Orleans with when I was, you know, in deep grief and really distraught, thinking, we're going to destroy this planet. I don't know how to live on it. I just, you know, moved into a place below sea level. My home was destroyed. My neighbors got drowned, and I have no clue how to live. And I moved to Madison, and here's this park with a baseball stadium, with parking lots, with tennis courts, with all kinds of sports facilities. But it also has wild meadows and a wetland and 178 species of birds, including eagles now nesting on the Marsh Island that used to be blown up during Rhythm and Booms.
A big fireworks show. This is a part of one of your main themes in the book, if I'm reading it right, Trish, that we sometimes think, okay, this is human development area and nature. Well, this is the thing we're doing what we can to preserve completely free of human impact. There's a lot more in our backyards than we might realize. That's worth protecting.
Right. Well, I think, you know, in our culture, it's not in all cultures, but definitely in Western industrialized cultures, we have this idea that we're separate from nature. And I had a big wall in my brain when I moved to Madison. You know, I'm separate from nature. And so the park, there are lines where the animals aren't going to cross. And I didn't think that I was going to find red-tailed hawks flying over the baseball stadium during games with freshly killed squirrels in their talons. I didn't think I was going to find red-tailed hawks mating for 30 seconds on top of the baseball stadium lights, right? I expected to find the birds and the animals only on the wilder side of the park, but they were all over the park. The animals really busted down that separation in my brain and opened my way of thinking. And nature is everywhere, including inside our homes. We're sharing our lives with nature all the time and with wild creatures and microscopic creatures. And we just don't realize it or see it or see them.
Talking to Trish O'Kane about her new book, Birding to Change the World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Trish, you ultimately went on to do this program, Birding to Change the World. It brought university students together with kids in the community. What inspired this? What were you hoping to do?
Right. Well, that was another happy accident. I have no children. I had no experience with children. I never planned to teach children. I wanted to get a PhD to teach college students. But when I started birding in Warner Park and discovered what an amazing birding hotspot it is and what an important place for birds migrating from the south to the north and further north, and also a summer nesting ground, I was amazed. And then I discovered that the city had plans to further build on the park and pave parts of it and cut down some of the woods and turn part of the wetland into a pontoon concession. And I knew I'd been studying ecology then a couple of years, and I knew that would really hurt the birds. So I was very alarmed. I started going to neighborhood meetings. And somewhere in the middle of all this, I talked to the city councilor. She's now the mayor, but at that time it was Satya Rhodes Conway for my district. And she said, look, she said, you're a graduate student. You're studying ecology. And there's hundreds of kids living in apartments around Warner Park, and they have no yards. The park is their yard, but there's no environmental programs in the park. So, you know, instead of just complaining about city plans, why don't you do something for your community? And she challenged me, and she was right. And so I set up a class at UW-Madison. I was a graduate student. The Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies supported me. And I started teaching undergraduates and taking them every week to Sherman Middle School, which is 1 mile from Warner Park. And we had a walking field trip to Warner Park. Each of my students was paired with a child for the entire semester. That started in 2010. It's still running in Madison, not exactly in the same way and not at Sherman Middle School, but the program's still going. It's taught by someone I trained. And then I duplicated the program here in Vermont. And Brown University in Rhode Island has also replicated the program in Providence. And it's a wild success. The schools love it. The kids love it. Parents love it. The community loves it. And it brings college students into neighborhoods. And so kids also get to think about going to college. And college is an accessible goal. It's not just about birds. It's about relationships between people.
Trish O'Kane is with us. Her new book is Birding to Change the World, a memoir. It tells, in part, the story of a Wisconsin community that came together to save a local park and a wider story of creating connections through a shared love of the natural world. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you love about birds? Do you have a magical spot in your community where you see lots of different birds? Have you worked with members of your own neighborhood to preserve maybe that very spot? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with environmental educator Trish O'Kane about her new book, Birding to Change the World, a memoir. What we can learn from our feathered friends about environmental stewardship and civic action. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a gateway bird, a portal bird, one that got you interested in bird watching? Do you have a favorite place to spend time watching birds and other wildlife in the state? Do you like to stop, slow down, and watch what's going on around you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Kathleen is with us in Madison. Kathleen, hi.
Hi. It's great hearing Trish on the radio. I met her when I moved to the same neighborhood in 2013, and I started just expanding my whole world by going across the street to Warner Park, and it has become my my living room, my grocery store, and my church. I spend a lot of time in there.
And are you involved, Kathleen, in some of the preservation efforts there?
Yeah, so for the past 3 or 4 years, I was the president of Wild Warner, and now I've turned to becoming the volunteer coordinator, and just incredible things are happening in this park. We've got the first thing that I thought was really cool as president, I made an emphasis on trying to keep the beavers in the park without any conflicts with human interests. And we did that. For 4 years, we had a beaver family, just no problems. We figured out how to keep them from damming and from chewing on trees, and they were just this great influence on the park.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for sharing that. Trish, Kathleen mentioned Wild Warner. You were heavily involved with that in your time. You write about that a lot in the book. Can you talk about that community of people that came together, of people who loved, as Kathleen did, this the wildlife of this park to try to protect it?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to thank Kathleen for calling in. She's one of my sheroes. And, you know, my husband and I left Madison, and it was people like Kathleen who kept the group going so strong. The park looks better than when I left. I cried when I saw it a couple of weeks ago when I was in Madison at the book festival. So Kathleen's an example of what someone can do. And I remember when she came to one of our first meetings, and she talked about making cookies from flour made from the cattails, and she taught people how to do it. She made the cookies and gave them to us. They were delicious. I mean, she's an incredibly creative educator and organizer. I admire her very much. So when we moved to Madison, Rob, I discovered through my dissertation, I started doing research on the environmental history of Warner Park and just talking to neighbors and you know, having conversations with them and walking through the park with them. And I discovered that there had been people who for decades had been trying to protect the park. And so every 10 years or so, there'd be a push to develop or build or destroy something, and people would rise up. Now, they never formally, there was a group. It wasn't a formal group. They called themselves the Wild Ones, and that was in the late 70s, and it was mostly senior citizens, and they organized themselves. But there was never a formal group. So my husband and I, we called a meeting of neighbors at our dining room table. I think it was in 2009, September 2009, 8 people showed up. I baked 2 apple pies, and that's how Wild Warner started, the group that Kathleen led for 3 or 4 years. And now she's leading dozens and dozens of volunteers from the community to plant trees and do all kinds of really cool things in Warner Park.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. We're talking to Trish O'Kane about her new book, Birding to Change the World, a memoir. Back to your calls. David is with us in South Milwaukee. David, hi.
Hey, Rob. Hey. So what really got me fascinated with birds is that in Warnemont Park in Cudahy, which is just south of the city of Milwaukee, there's a colony of thousands of bank swallows that breeds there. And they dig burrows into the sides of the bluffs. And when you see it, you just would never, ever guess that you were in Wisconsin. And it's just an incredible sight. And also, like, they're these tiny little birds, and they migrate all the way from South America. So I just think it's just one of those things that, you know, you would just never expect to see here so close to the city of Milwaukee.
David, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Trish, a lot of people, I think, have their entry bird, the gateway bird that opens their eyes to a whole new world. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes. Well, I love, thank you, David, for the story about the bank swallows. There are swallows in Warner Park, too. And it's so important that you notice that species and that you love them and that you broadcast this, because swallows are insect eaters, as you know, aerial insectivores. They hunt on the wing. And all insect-eating birds, which is most birds, are in serious trouble. Their numbers are dropping because we're losing our insect populations. So people, if you love birds, you gotta love the bugs. I was sort of a classic screamer whenever I saw a spider or any kind of bug, and I lived in Central America, and there were some really obnoxious big cockroaches there. But after I started birding and I took entomology, because the birds eat bugs, I figure I better study some bugs too, completely changed how I see insects, learning what they do, the jobs they do, how they support our whole food web. Yes, thank
David,
you.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Trish, an important thing to you, and this comes up again and again in your book, is making sure the benefits of nature and birding are available to everybody, and they are not. We've had high-profile incidents of racial profiling of people birding. What kind of things are you hoping to see change?
Well, I think a lot is changing because of birders of color are fomenting a powerful, peaceful revolution. I really was deeply impacted by the work of Dr. Drew Lanham, who's an African-American avian ecologist at Clemson University. And anybody you want to see what he's done, just Google his name and look up, I think it's 9 Rules for the Black Bird Watcher, and it's a very powerful YouTube about birding and racism. So there's all kinds of books coming out. There's all kinds of new birding clubs forming, birders of color, feminist book clubs. It's a very exciting time to be in the birding world. But I think we can't ignore the fact that in our country, for a lot of people, this country is a war zone. I mean, there are people who are terrified of this, our security forces. And I used to work as a human rights journalist in Central America, monitoring security forces who were murdering people. And I come back to my own country and find that not all police are bad, but a lot of police and different police forces, including in Burlington, where I live, you know, have a serious bias problem against people of color. And it's one thing to have biases. We all have them. It's another thing to have biases and be carrying a gun.
And Trish, on a lighter note, to wrap up with, you were just back in Wisconsin. What were some of the birds you're hoping to see? Maybe what are some of the birds that come through Wisconsin do you miss now that you're over in Vermont?
Oh, Rob, I cried when I saw the sandhill cranes in Warner Park, because we do not have sandhill cranes. And I mean, when I taught in Warner Park, the kids, when they saw those cranes, they just stopped and stared like as if they were in church or something, because the cranes were bigger than them. And so I miss the cranes. I miss the way they bugle, the duet. I miss how when their chicks would hatch, and they're called colts, and they would walk, parade them around the park. That is a bird I will always, always miss.
Trish, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob. Enjoyed talking to you. I miss Wisconsin.
That's Trish O'Kane, former journalist, current environmental educator, senior lecturer at the University of Vermont. She is with us today to share some insights from her new book. It's called Birding to Change the World, a memoir. A lot of Wisconsin in that book, as you heard, including her efforts to preserve Warner Park and all the bird species that show up there in Madison's north side. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, writer Anne Lamott is back with us to share her new book. It's called Somehow, Thoughts on Love. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, How Not to Cook, we'll ask for your biggest cooking mistakes and what you learned from them, whether it was your first cooking effort or your last one, something you did last night. You can get us started right now, by the way. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Again, share that cooking gone wrong story. Email ideas@wpr.org. Then join that conversation. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.